What is up, everybody? Welcome back to the Tomatoito Boxing Show, and we're going to dive in to do a preview episode for Conor Benn, his debut in Las Vegas, Nevada, which is going to take place tomorrow. The weigh-ins took place earlier today, and this is going to be a fight where they each came in around 150 pounds, so not quite the welterweight sanction fight or a super welter junior middle weight. It's a catch weight. Conor Benn's going to be fighting Pistol Pete Dobson, and we'll dive in. Let's talk about this fight. It's an interesting one. It may be overlooked by many. A lot of the people that I've been speaking with, not really interested in this fight, not really into Conor Benn, especially after the whole controversy that happened against Chris Eubanks Jr. and the follow-up to that, or the fallout from that. But I see it a little bit differently. I see that this fight is going to be very entertaining, and it's intriguing. And we'll dive into it. So welcome back. Eddie Hearn's Matchroom Boxing putting on an event to open up February. This is going to be February 3rd, of course, by the time that the fight comes around. And opening up the month of February with a decent card. This is going to be at the Cosmopolitan in Las Vegas at the Chelsea Ballroom. And good main event, in my opinion, now that I've been breaking down and doing some more research on both fighters, and the co-main event as well, featuring Emma Williams, and we'll talk about that fight as well. Let's jump into it. Conor Benn and Peter Dobson. Who is Peter Dobson? This is almost, a lot of people told me, and I heard one of the comments, somebody told me that this is kind of like a Jake Paul type thing where they're just picking mismatches to look good and stay busy fights. I see it a lot differently than this. Peter Dobson is relatively unknown, doesn't have the big marketability team behind him, the big push behind him by way of a promoter, but he should. He's actually a very good fighter with good pedigree, Golden Gloves fighter, and he's undefeated. He's coming into this fight at 16-0. Conor Benn's coming into this fight at 22-0. He definitely has the bigger upside. But also, if he loses this fight, his career could very well begin to derail. He has the name. He has the legacy of his father. And so that brings a lot of notoriety to his career thus far. 22-0, 14 knockouts. Billed as a destroyer. And he is definitely a fun fighter to watch. But there is a lot of flaws. He is still relatively young as a boxer. There's still a lot of things that he needs to improve on. Like most boxers, as they're up and coming, there's a lot of things that they work on in camp. There's something unique about Conor Benn in which he seems to have adapted to a style which is kind of a mix of a Kell Brook, Amir Khan new style of boxing with fast hands, decent footwork, and he implements the explosivity of his father in the way in which he releases the punches. Fast hands, pretty good footwork, has a wide stance, has wide arching, looping punches, a lot of hooks, a lot of uppercuts, but when he delivers, he's very dynamic and very explosive. He has good punching power, but not the greatest punching power, and we saw that in his last fight, his very last fight against Rodolfo Orozco. This took place in Orlando. That was September, I believe, of last year. And Rodolfo Orozco, that fight took place at junior middleweight or super welterweight at 154 pounds. Rodolfo Orozco was coming in with a record of 32-2 going into that fight. Several draws to his record, not the most knockouts. So he didn't possess a super heavy punching power or stopping power, but he gave Conor Benn enough problems to where the fight ended up going all 10 rounds. This was, of course, Conor Benn's return from the long layoff and inactivity, so you could give him a little break there as far as getting rid of the wrinkles and kinks from all that inactivity. And that's due to the fallout of the testing positive and the being suspended and so forth that took place from when he was about to fight Eubanks. I think that all came down within 2-3 days leading to the main event, and the fight got called off. Conor Benn came back, fought in Orlando, fought Rodolfo Orozco, your traditional tall, lanky Mexican fighter who starts with a left hand and would refuse to go down for anybody. Great chin, and just kept coming forward. By the second half of that fight, Conor Benn started getting a little frustrated. And you could see that his punching power and the power that he possesses that he normally takes opponents out with was not working against Orozco, to which he punches so hard and throws so much behind everything that he does early on in the early rounds or the early portion of the fights, that his stamina starts dwindling by the second half. This was a 10-round fight. By round 7, you could definitely see that Orozco gets into his rhythm, keeps coming at Conor Benn with a similar rhythm, similar pace, whereas Conor Benn starts diminishing because he starts so fast and so strong, throws everything out there. That could very well backfire against an experienced fighter like Peter Dobson. Who is Peter Dobson? Well, like I said, he's a New York native, New York Golden Gloves. He's been, if you look at his professional record, if you look at his resume, he's 16-0, 9 knockouts. And professionally, he's been inactive since June of 2022. And I say that with an asterisk, right? Because according to his resume, he has not been fighting or has not fought professionally. This was an 8-round fight that he last fought in June of 22 against Rodrigo Coria, who was a relatively good fighter, 10-3 record, 8-round fight. Dobson got the unanimous decision on that night. But I put an asterisk on that because Peter Dobson has actually been active. He's trying to raise his profile. He's trying to become more known. And he took part of, and has been taking part of, the Combat League. And if you're not familiar with the Combat League, I'm going to put an episode, since I put an episode together for the BKFC, who actually has a main event tonight. Austin Trout against Luis Palomino are actually the headlining event, or the main event of that card. Check that out. I'm a big fan of the BKFC, and I did an episode dedicated to the BKFC and Dave Feldman and what he's doing with the BKFC. I did an episode not that long ago, so you could find it and track it down on the catalog, just maybe about a month ago or so. The Combat League, I'm going to go ahead, and now this gives me a good idea now that we're talking about it. I'm going to dedicate an episode and bring a little more notoriety to what the Combat League is doing, their platform, their format, which is a lot different than traditional boxing. But it's involving a lot of professional boxers and a lot of amateur boxers, and they're bringing them together and creating teams. It's kind of like a season type, traditional sports season type format. So Peter Dobson has been active in that format. So the 8-round fight with Coria was back in June of 22. That was his last win, his 16th win. Now in the Combat League, he has a record of 3-7. 3 wins, 7 losses. He's lost his last 6 in the Combat League, but they're not fully sanctioned fights. These are 1-round fights. Again, if you're not familiar with what I'm talking about with the Combat League, go look at it. Go check it out and familiarize yourself with it, because this is a fast-paced, fast-moving type format in which you have 1 round to try to secure points for your team, and the team with the most points ends up winning the competition, and they do a season and then playoff type format. So Peter Dobson lost technically his last 6 fights, his last 6 competitions in the Combat League, but those are 6 rounds in itself against different boxers. 2 of them he fought against another contender, up-and-coming fighter in Casey Dixon. 2 of them he lost to Keandre Leatherwood. But those are different dates, not the same night. Just to give you an example, he fought Keandre Leatherwood May of 23, and then he fought him later in the season, August of 23. 1 round each, one of those competitions, and he dropped both of those rounds against him. Different matchups, different dates. Casey Dixon, he fought him twice in the same day, same event. That was August 15th of 23. Lost to Quincy Williams, June of 23, and lost to Khalid Johnson, May 4th. So that's a whole different format. It's a whole different beast, but he's active. What I'm getting at is that, yes, it looks on resume, and people that are just jumping on BoxRec or any of the other sites that give you resumes, topology, and so forth, you see it and you're like, man, Ben is picking on an inactive fighter. This guy hasn't been active since June of 22. Well, maybe if you're saying that as far as a professional setting goes, but he's been very active, if anything, more active than Conor Ben, and training in a new format in which he has to deliver in a faster time frame. And that's going to make him very dangerous, because Conor Ben likes to start very, very fast. Definitely within the first four rounds, he likes to start inflicting his damage and his game plan. And Dobson is training a fast-paced, fast-rhythm type output now with this Combat League format of having to do whatever you have to do to win the round. So he's fighting at a different pace and training himself to fight at a different rhythm, which I really feel is going to come in handy for him. 16 wins, 9 knockouts, undefeated as well, just like Conor Ben with his 22-14 record. Peter Dobson likes to sit on his punches. He's very tight. He's the more flat-footed of the two fighters. He's not very explosive with his punches, but he's more of a traditional hard-punching, hard-nosed fighter. Tight guard, inches forward, doesn't mind fighting on his back foot, whereas Conor Ben's, he's more uncomfortable with it because he has a wider stance and likes to move around the ring. When he gets trapped against the ropes, and we saw it against Orozco, it posed problems for Ben, and he was getting caught with uppercuts. Dobson likes to fight an inch forward, really tight guard, and likes to deliver punches mostly on the inside. So his dilemma is going to be trying to get in on the inside of Conor Ben. Not the most difficult thing to do, because Conor Ben stands wide, but also tends to throw looping, wide arching punches. All power, all the time from Conor Ben. That leaves the inside open for him. Against Orozco, who was a taller, lankier fighter, well, Orozco could cover ground and move in on Ben a lot quicker and a lot more efficiently because of his reach and his span, his leg span. He was able to cover more ground. Dobson, a little bit taller than Conor Ben, but not like Orozco. He's just maybe an inch or so taller than Conor Ben, a little bit wider frame, but he's going to be sitting there, and he's there to be hit. Conor Ben's going to be able to unleash on him. But Peter Dobson seems to be a very durable fighter. If you do some research on him, he seems to have a good chin, very durable, and will come forward on Conor Ben. He unleashes a lot of uppercuts and a lot of inside punches. He likes to pass the guard and loops punches around the defense and around the guard of his opponents. Very crafty. I think where the downfall for Dobson happens is if the fight starts getting sloppy. And it often happens with Conor Ben because he's so dynamic that he goes in and out in wide angles and in such quick succession that he tends to headbutt with his opponents, not flagrantly and maybe not purposefully, but it happens because he leads in with his head and he often pops his head up to get out or to step back and ends up headbutting his opponents. And that happened in his very last fight as well. And if that starts happening, he's going to cut up and hurt Dobson, where he's not used to being involved in that type of fight, facing that much adversity against an explosive fighter. He usually tends to be the more explosive of the fighters, at least if you look at his resume and the fights that he's had. He tends to be the more explosive fighter, and that's not saying much for him because he's not a very fast-moving fighter. He doesn't deliver as fast as Ben, but he does have punching power, and I really think that the speed, the footwork, the dynamics are going to Conor Ben. But I think Dobson is a heavier puncher out of the two fighters. just based on the way that he delivers his punches, he seems to generate a lot of power from a very short distance, doesn't need the looping hammer and the wide angle to get his entire body and his hip into the punch. He seems to generate power from a very close guard in a very close position, and I think that's going to cause Conor Benn some problems. I really feel that the fight will sway depending on the flow that is set within the first four rounds. Is it going to be a fast-moving type of fight where Conor Benn is just moving around the ring and controlling the rhythm? Or if they're going to fight on the inside, I think Conor Benn is going to be in trouble. And I think Dobson has the upper hand there. That's what he's going to try to do. He's going to inch forward. If you look at every one of Dobson's fights, he doesn't abandon that style. He inches forward. He keeps coming forward. He's a very durable fighter, good chin, and he doesn't mind fighting on the back foot and often baits the opponents to fight him on the ropes, which is where he's able to unleash inside punches and uppercuts. Conor Benn's uncomfortable fighting against the ropes. And when he puts his opponents towards the ropes, or he pinches his opponents and corners them, he still tends to throw very wide, which exposes the inside. And that's where Dobson could capitalize on this. The fight is a lot more intriguing than what people are giving it respect for. And I definitely hope you guys watch it. I want to hear what you guys have to say about the fight before the fight happens. And remember, you could find me on Instagram, which is the main page to the show. Or you could leave me comments, whether it be on Spotify or iTunes, iHeartRadio, Pandora, you name it. You know how to find me already. You could leave me a message on X. You bet your ass I'm going to be watching this fight. I'm very intrigued to see where Conor Benn goes, because he wants to be one of the top dogs at welterweight, willing to fight anybody between welterweight and middleweight. But this is another fight that is not at welterweight. He fought at super middle, or super welter, at 154. Now they weighed in at 150. And Chris Van Heerden, which was his fight prior to when the whole lead up to Chris Eubanks was going to be, that was a 147. That was a welterweight sanctioned fight with Chris Eubanks. If you guys remember, they were doing a catch weight at 157 or 158, something like that, just below the middleweight. The middleweight sanctioned weight or class or division, which was causing controversy in itself, with Chris Eubanks having to lose and cut so much weight and the rehydration clause and blah, blah, blah that was going on with that. Anyways, the fight never happened, and Conor Benn then bounces back to 154. Now he's at 150. So he's inching closer to the welterweight division if he's going to be a top dog at welterweight, but he needs to decide. And his body continues to grow and mature, and who knows, maybe he'll just be another dog at 154. In a division where Tim Tzu seems to be the most active and the most dominant fighter right now, competing at 154. Not to take anything away from Jermell, who's coming off a performance against Canelo Alvarez, a subpar performance at that. But listen, he was moving up two divisions to challenge the king at 168, daring to be great. You can't knock on Jermell Charlo for that, because he cleaned out 154 while Tim Tzu was still making his way and making his name. So who knows where Conor Benn's going to end up, but don't overlook Pete Dobson, because he's actually a very good fighter with good pedigree boxing, good amateur pedigree boxing to support him. So that's going to be an entertaining fight. I'm really interested to hear from you guys to see how you guys are calling it, how you guys are seeing this fight. If you think it's just another stay busy type fight for Conor Benn, just to get some more rounds under him, which obviously it looks like it's going to be that way. I just think the test is going to be a little tougher for him than what they're giving Pete Dobson credit for. And then, of course, let's bounce over to the co-main event. I mentioned Amo Williams at the beginning of the episode. Amo Williams, 15-0. He's a fun fighter to watch. I've seen several of his fights. He's 15-0 with 10 knockouts. He competes and campaigns at the middleweight division. I think he ended up walking out a dog in one of his walkouts, one of his recent walkouts. I don't remember who it was against. But I think he ended up walking out with a dog. He's the first fighter to do that. And he's a showman for sure. He's fun to watch. He's fun to listen to. He's respectful. He's humble. And he fights. He likes to fight. He likes to get in there, mix it up. Again, this is a fighter that has all the upside going for him. And I've been following him maybe for the last four or five fights. And since I started catching wind of Amo Williams and who he was, he's a fun fighter to watch. And I'm really looking forward to seeing that and see how he performs against Armel Mbumba. A fighter out of Congo, up-and-coming fighter who's been being built up fairly normal. He's 10-0. And he's got his level of opposition hasn't been the absolute best, but it's been fairly good opposition. Opponents with decent records. He's 10-0 with 7 knockouts. His opposition continues to get better. He's a fighter, a native of Congo who trains and fights out of Germany. His last fight was a journeyman, Ramiro Blanco, 19-26, with 3 draws. It was a 6-rounder. A big, big, big opportunity for him should he pull the upset against Amo Williams, who has all the upside and a ever so rising stock. Right now, Amo Williams is maybe a couple fights away, 2-3 fights away from becoming a who's who in the middleweight division that seems to be so light at the moment and so lacking. And Mbumba ends up fighting Robert Araiza prior to Ramiro Blanco, a fighter with a 19-5 record. And Mbumba got the majority decision on that one. Prior to that, he had a knockout streak going, and that's when he had the lesser level opposition, right? Where he's starting to build his name. A 25-32, Achille Szabo. He won by TKO in the second round there. Roland Hamar, 5-14 record going into that fight, or 5-13 record going into that fight. Won by stoppage in the first round. And so forth. So Mbumba's been built up just fine. He's 10-0. That's just about normal to see those type of records and the opposition as far as matchmaking goes. They've been bringing him up fairly well. I think this is a huge step up for him to fight someone with the pedigree of Amo Williams. So Austin Amo Williams, 15-0, 10 knockouts. Out of Houston, he fought Steve Rolls in his last fight. Steve Rolls, of course, you remember him from having fought Triple G several years back. 10-round fight, he comes away with the unanimous decision there. That was a good, stay busy fight. River Wilson, 14-2 record. Amo stops him in the 8th round. Simon Madsen, 13-0 record. That was December of 22. Amo beats him by unanimous decision. Kieran Conway, 18-2 record. Another 10-round fight. September of 22. Cordell Booker, 17-0 record. Stopped them in the first round. April of 22. Javier Francisco Maciel. 33-15 record. Journeyman. Stops them in the 6th round of an 8th round fight. That was February of 22. So look at his activity. 4 fights in 22. 2 fights in 23. And here he goes kicking off his calendar for 2024. Now, just those fights that I mentioned, 4 or 5 fights, look at the records that I gave you. Obviously, he's been stepping into the ring against higher level opposition and other fellow prospects within the middleweight division who have themselves fought better level opposition when they were stepping into the ring and being matched against Amo Williams. So the work is going to be cut out for Mbumba, who's been fighting 6-round fights. when Amel's used to fighting 10-round fights. There's definitely a disparaging level there of talent. But it's going to be great exposure for Mbumba to be in a bigger event with a bigger promotional company. The upsides for him, if he's able to pull off the upset, he's going to be relying on his power to bail him out. Should he be able to land on Amel? But Amel's a little bit too elusive for Mbumba, and I see a stoppage maybe within the first half of the fight. This is going to be a 10-round fight. I don't think it goes the distance. I think Amel Williams will pull this off within the first half of the fight. Amel Williams will move on to bigger and better fights. This will be a good stay busy fight for him. And a good test at that, because you start fighting such high level opposition or hungry opposition that continues to climb as everybody's stepping on one another to try to get to the top and fighting one another. This is kind of a reset and a step back for him. So he's got to be fully aware and take it as if it's the most dangerous opponent he's faced to date, because it has to be. You know, we've seen the story tell itself multiple times in other people's careers where they don't wake up for a certain opponent because it doesn't happen to be a big name opponent, and they tend to have a tougher night because they just want to be in the big main events and the big stellar events with the big name opponent. And when they have a stay busy tune-up type fight or a lesser known opponent, they don't wake up for it. They mess around at camp and they take their guard down, and they end up paying for it in the ring. So let's hope that's not the case for Amel Williams. And it doesn't seem to be. He's so hungry right now. And he's just on a trajectory that it's just straight up. Straight uphill for him. And I can't wait to see by the end of this calendar year if he's going to be competing for one of the major titles. Don't be so shocked if they throw him in there to fight maybe even Janibek. Or Adamus. But he should be in that realm already, especially with Eddie Hearn. Who knows? He may get a better level opposition by the end of the calendar year, but he should be getting close to title contention by, if he doesn't get to compete for a title by the end of this calendar year and he stays active and on the win column, he should be getting lined up for a title by early 2025. But this has to be his year, and he's starting at the right moment. Because if this becomes one of the traditional fights that he's been putting on in his last few 4 or 5 fights, where he's been ending them fairly quickly, he's got, let's see, 1, 2, 3. I'm looking at his resume right now. So just in his last 5 fights, all 10-round fights, 50 rounds scheduled altogether, right? He's fought 39 rounds of the 50 scheduled rounds in 5 fights, all 10-rounders. That's a lot of good work. So he's in a good trajectory right now. That's a lot of good work. A lot of exposure. So I'm excited. I'm excited to see how he looks. I'm excited to see how he performs and where his career takes off from here. I really feel that that's going to be a winnable fight for him against Mbumba. I just want to see how he performs. If he looks better and he continues to work on his craft and show new angles and new versions of Amel Williams as he continues to come into his own in his young career. So that's an exciting one. Conor Benn, Pistol Pete Dobson, don't take your eyes off of it. A lot of people think that this is going to be a wash, that this is going to be easy work for Conor Benn, and a lot of people tend to say that because they don't know much about the opposition. But don't take your eyes off of them. Do some research tonight, especially after you listen to this episode, and see what you think. See if I'm seeing this correctly, because I really think that Pete Dobson has fairly good pedigree behind him, supporting him, and he's going to give Conor Benn headaches in that ring. If he gets stopped, it's going to be because of the explosivity of Conor Benn, and he gets caught with one of those looping punches and heavy hammer punches that Conor Benn likes to throw, those big, heavy-handed hooks that he likes to connect on, and that's understandable, right? If he ends up going down like that, But Pete Dobson has shown to date that he has a good chin and that he has lasting power. I think the fight's going to be a lot tougher, and I'm seeing a lot tougher of a fight for Conor Benn than what most people are seeing here. And even in the lead up to the fight, in the press conference where Dobson questions Eddie Hearn and tells him, "You haven't seen me fight." And Eddie Hearn's like, "No, I haven't." And I'm like, "Oh, wow." Like, that's, you know, that might be a slap in the face when he performs. If it's a wash, if it's a easy tune-up fight for Conor Benn, well, we move on to see what he's going to do, if he's actually going to continue going to welterweight or not. But I think we'll have a lot to talk about after this fight and a lot to break down when it's all said and done tomorrow night. And we'll see how he looks against a crafty veteran like a Pete Dobson, who's also undefeated himself. Veteran because he's so active and he's been around the block for several years now. But he's still fairly young as far as his resume is concerned, 16-0, and I think the upside's for him as well, and he'll be able to draw a lot bigger crowd and a bigger fan base for himself with a solid performance against Conor Benn tomorrow. So I'll leave you guys with that. Let me know what you think, and we'll definitely be catching one another on the post-fight episode. Have a good one. Have a good night. Take care of yourselves.